This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
And we're coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans Studios. When you need certainty in the home buying process with a loan that fits your life, Rocket can. It is the Zach Gelb Show on a Monday right here on CBS Sports Radio. Right now, we'll head out to the hotline, welcoming a former Detroit Lion and a Super Bowl champion with the Seattle Seahawks, and that's former NFL Pro Bowler in Cliff Avril. Cliff, always do appreciate the time. Hope you and the family are well. And here's what I'll start you off with. If you were getting ready for this season, and this has been an unprecedented offseason for the NFL, training camp is expected to start at the end of the month, and who knows if we'll have the season kick off on time. Take me through those emotions and those feelings of what you're going through right now if you were still playing.
You know what? It depends on where you're at in your career, right? If you're a young player, you know, your first few years in the league, you're hoping there's a season. You're hoping you're going to get out there. Obviously the money plays a role and all those different things. So, yeah, you know, you're also, as a young player, you kind of don't think about tomorrow, right? You feel like you're invincible. You're not thinking about the future. So, of course, a lot of guys want to get out there. But as a veteran player, you know, year 8, year 9, year 10, you've made some money. Like, you're analyzing this situation completely different as far as for playing with the virus and different things like that. So I just think it depends on where you're at in your career, how mature you are, you know, and what really moves you. But if I was playing year 10, I would be considering to sit out because of the uncertainty of the virus and different things like that.
How much are you going to be watching basketball and baseball when these sports, hockey too, when they start back up, just as an athlete, you know, if you were still playing and saying, I'm just curious how it goes?
Yeah, I think I would tune in. I would tune in even to sports I don't even normally watch, like hockey or something like that. I would tune in because I'd be interested to see how these players are trying to protect themselves, obviously, but also just checking to see, you know, how much the game will change, right? Because I do think there will be a lot of changes. Whether in the NBA, I don't know. I don't know how they're going to get out there and not be in each other's face and whatnot, right? Or hockey or baseball, I think, is a little bit different, you know, because everyone is so spread out there. You can actually go, you know, a whole game and possibly not even make contact with another individual. But I would be paying attention just to see how all these leagues have approached this new norm for the time being and seeing how they go about it.
Well, we're seeing a bubble now for basketball coming up at the end of the month. They're actually reporting this week. Could a bubble ever work in football? I know this topic was thrown around the last two weeks, and I don't think it can. What are your thoughts about the bubble?
No. What, I mean, how? You know, like, how does that work with 60 grown men that are really, like, the sport is to run into each other, right? And to be in each other's face. You talk about D-line and O-line, you know, battles. I recall, you know, sometimes hitting a guy so hard his sweat ends up falling into my face or vice versa, you know. So I don't know how you do it. I really don't. I don't see that being a thing for football. It's going to be interesting to watch, you know, how all these guys move around in this new space. And I really think even with the NFL, I think that all it's going to take is one guy to get it, and then, you know, other teams aren't going to necessarily want to play. And then what happens? Because you only got 16 opportunities, right? So how did that affect the rest of the season? It's going to be interesting to watch.
Do you think if just one player gets it, the league would start to shut down? That's what you think?
I think if one guy gets it, it gets harder to be able to play. Think about it. I'm thinking if I was in the Seattle Seahawks locker room and I'm about to play the Dallas Cowboys and they say such and such has the virus, and now, you know, oh, he's quarantined along with, you know, three other guys. How do we not know, you know, the other 50 guys don't have it? How do we not know the coaches don't have it, you know, and those types of things. So I think it's a snowball effect when it comes down to that. And then now you're like, okay, as a player, I want to play the Dallas Cowboys this week, right? I don't want to play them for another 4 weeks or whatever the case may be. So I just think it throws the entire season off if that becomes an issue.
And that's a big part of it, Cliff Avril, and we've been talking about this as well. You know, you could find out that you test negative and a teammate tests positive, but it's the natural anxiety and the thought of, hey, that could have been you, that could really throw players basically saying, yeah, maybe I want to sit this one out.
Exactly. And I think that's where it boils down to, is like, you don't know when or how that individual caught it, where they caught it from, and how long have they passed it on to me. Okay, now I was a part of that group, but I was just talking to the quarterback. Now, does he have it? You know, it's just a mind game. It becomes more. The game of football is already stressful enough, and then you add this component to it. I mean, it becomes hard, and I don't know how some guys are gonna, you know, manage and get through this process.
Talking to Cliff Avril right now. 2020 has not been kind to a lot of us. Very kind though to Patrick Mahomes. You knew he was gonna get a lot of money, Cliff. 10 years. I didn't see this one coming.
Yeah, I didn't see it coming. Honestly, I mean, 10 years is a long time, right? And you know, usually there's not that many guys that have signed for 10-year deals and that actually played the entire 10-year deal out, right? You think about Culpepper, you think about some of these other guys, they've never actually played the entirety of these, I'm talking about from a length standpoint, deals out, right? So I think that for me as an ex-player, I'm like, that's a little bit long. But you talk about $400 million. You're talking about $100 million. I mean, it's hard to turn that down. I don't care where you're at in life. I don't, you know what I mean? So I'm excited for him. I'm happy that he did it. I'm happy that he's able to get his money. He obviously is happy with the deal, and that's all that matters at the end of the day.
So this deal ties him up in Kansas City for the next 12 years. He already's got a Super Bowl underneath his belt. How many more you think he wins?
Ooh. Now that he can go out there and play freely, he can go out there and make some things happen. Now, we all know it's extremely hard to win back-to-back. We know how hard it is to win a Super Bowl and those different things. But I think more so than anything, he's going to be an electrifying player to watch. Everybody's going to be excited to watch this guy for the next 10 years in KC and seeing what he does. You see him on primetime games left and right. You know, you're going to see him on all these billboards and commercials and different things like that. So I just think for him, more so than anything, he might win another Super Bowl here or there, but just his play in general, I think, is just going to be exciting to watch, and knowing that we're going to see it in that uniform for the next, you know, several years is going to be pretty cool and awesome to watch.
Cliff Avril here with us on the show. All right, let me get to one of your former teams in the Seattle Seahawks. I'll start things off with Jadeveon Clowney. I saw that the Raiders were interested in him now. We know Tennessee, the Browns, and Seattle have all been interested in the former first-round pick. Where do you think Clowney's playing in 2020 if we have a season?
Ooh, I'm hoping he stays here in Seattle. And the reason why I think it's still a high possibility, and this is me not knowing anything from management or anything like that, I just think that an offseason like what we just experienced, there was no offseason, right? There was no OTAs. As a free agent, honestly, if you were an injured free agent, you probably didn't sign a big deal like you expected yourself to, because you weren't able to fly out to see these teams. And that's the situation Clowney finds himself in, is he wasn't able to go check out and get checked out by these teams to sign that major deal that he was looking for. So I think if I'm in Clowney's situation, I'm thinking that, hey, you know what, I'm going to go back to the organization that I just played for. I know the system. I know the coaches. I know what they expect from me. And mind you, you know, he got here a week before the season started last year. So now he can actually get into the swing of things and go out there and be more productive. So if I'm Clowney, I'm thinking, hey, I'm going to sign back with the Seahawks because of all these things that I just mentioned, on top of, you know, obviously knowing the players and different things like that. But who knows? If Oakland gives him a crazy deal, he might end up there. But I think overall right now, the biggest play or the best play would be to remain here in Seattle.
If they can't get Clowney back to Seattle, when you look at that defense, and the defense to me is the biggest key this year for that football team, and I like the Seahawks as a football team, do you think that defense can win a Super Bowl this year with the group that they have currently?
I think with Russell Wilson and Bobby Wagner, the sky's the limit, right? That's first and foremost. But then you mentioned the defense. I think with Bobby leading the way, you talk about KJ Wright, two guys that have been the centerpiece of some amazing years throughout the years, and obviously going to Super Bowls and different things like that, they know what it takes to win. And I think a lot of younger players are looking up to those guys and seeing what that looks like. Now, I do think, you know, they need to add some more pass rushers. Another reason why I think the Seahawks need to try to keep Clowney as well, because you can never have too many pass rushers. And then someone like him who can be disruptive as well. So maybe you add another pass rusher, but they have Jaren Reed. They have Bruce Irvin. They've added some guys to beef that up. So I think the potential is definitely there. Now it's all about going out and executing.
Cliff Averill here with us. The last 2 years for the Seahawks, Cliff, have been very interesting because a lot of big-name guys, you know, with those teams that went to back-to-back Super Bowls are no longer there, including yourself, Cam Chancellor, Richard Sherman, Earl Thomas, Michael Bennett, and so many more. What have been your biggest thoughts and takeaways the last 2 years where we didn't really know what to expect out of Seattle nationally, and they still have shown they could be a pretty damn good football team going back-to-back playoffs?
It's been great to watch Russell Wilson come and lead the ship, right, and take over, right? Early on in his career, he didn't have to. You know, you talk about all those names of those guys. You talk about Marshawn, some of these guys. Like, he didn't necessarily have to be the leader of the team. He can just be himself, figure things out, learn from all these guys, and you know, continue to take his time as far as for, you know, his progression. But to watch Russell Wilson and do what he's done these last couple of years has been extremely impressive because his numbers have gotten better. You know, obviously I think he's been one of the top quarterbacks in the NFL over the last few years. So just watching his growth and him leading the team to be able to win, you know, double-digit games every year, even though people are saying, hey, your defense isn't as good as it used to be, he's still finding ways to win. So I would say that is the biggest component of it all, is just Russell Wilson has taken control over this team, and he's showing why he's an elite. He should be in those talks of MVP and an elite quarterback.
What has Pete shown you the last 2 years?
That he can adjust, as far as for giving the throne to the offense instead of depending on the defense and whatnot. You know, but also I think the coolest thing with Coach Carroll, I think, is once he knows what his team is going to be, he sticks to that, right? You know, back in those days, it was a defensive team, so he stuck to that. Hey, we're going to depend on the defense. You know, the last couple of years, hey, we're going to run the mess out of this ball, and no matter what, you know, whatever the circumstances are, we're going to run the ball. And he sticks to that, and then he lets Russell Wilson go do his thing. So, he sticks to his guns. He knows what kind of team he has, and he sticks with it.
Wrap it up with Cliff Averill. We saw the video of Antonio Brown and Russell Wilson working out. Is AB going to Seattle in your mind?
You know what? I wouldn't mind seeing him here. And the reason I say that, a lot of people here in Seattle are like, I don't know. You know, it comes with a lot of baggage and all these different things. But if people remember, you know, throughout, you know, 2010 to 2018, we probably had the most vocal, you know, controversial team in NFL history collectively, right? You're talking about a wide range of personalities, a wide range of guys doing their own thing. But on Sundays, guess what? We went and won ball games. And a coach that knows how to do that is is Coach Carroll. So getting AB and his talents, I think, can help the team. But also, if you're worried about the baggage and everything else, I think Coach Carroll, Russell Wilson, Bobby Wagner, those guys can manage that situation and make him a great player, make him go out and do what he needs to do, and also not necessarily tarnish or mess up the locker room as most people think.
Here's the big thing, though. Regardless of the leadership in that locker room, and hey, Seattle's a team, they get the benefit of the doubt. If they bring him in, they could survive that even if it doesn't work. There's still a multi-million dollar question and a great unknown what Antonio Brown you're getting. He's a great football player, but I don't know where his head's at.
Yeah, but at the end of the day, I know I've had coaches tell me, hey, we're here to win football games. We're here to win, to make sure guys are doing what they need to do on the football field, right? And I think that's all most coaches care about. Now, of course, there's some guys that are exceptions. I think with AB, with the talent that he has, you're going to probably get him for cheap. You might as well kick the tire on him and see what he presents on the team. And then also, again, I think with leadership, leadership plays a big role in this. Leadership plays a huge role in being able to manage personalities, and I think they do have those guys that can do that.
And it would be a low-risk, high-reward if you look at it, because it's probably only going to be a one-year deal with all that he's been through last year and a half, 2 years in this league. Now, here's my question. If they bring him in your mind, does that put them ahead of the 49ers if you could get him there the whole season, or would you still look at that as an even race?
I would say it gives them maybe a little bit of an inch above the 49ers, right? Because the thing the 49ers have, I would say, is their defense is pretty solid. You know, they were number one pretty much throughout the year, and then they kind of fell off towards the end, or they had a couple games that threw them off. And then, obviously, you know, on offense, they have a running game, and they try to make some things happen with Jimmy G. But with Seattle Seahawks, if they were to sign AB, I think they would definitely give them a bit of an advantage, because I would pick Russ over Jimmy G any day of the week. No knock on Jimmy. I just like Russell, right? And I know what Russ can do. But then you add somebody like AB. You talk about Lockett. You talk about DK Metcalf. I mean, that's mean. And then you talk about the backfield as well with Carson and some of those guys. I mean, that offense can be pretty dangerous if you add him in the mix of things.
Do you think Cam works out in New England?
Man, I would love for it to work out, man. I think Cam deserves it. Just a few years ago, the man was the MVP of the league, you know, took his team to the Super Bowl. I played against him. I understand how hard it is to tackle him. I understand what he can do on the football field. I think he can. It's all about, really, if Bill Belichick really believes in him. Will they put him in the right position to win, right? Because that's what they did with Tom Brady. Tom Brady's arm kind of got a little bit weaker. You know, they adjusted some things. They changed their offense, and they adapted to that. So can you do that with Cam Newton, right? And I think you can. I just hope they have belief in him. And if they believe in him, Cam can go out there and execute. And he has a chip on his shoulder. He wants to prove the world that he's still who what he was a few years ago.
Cliff Avril, if you were a free agent and you see Brady leaves New England, and we know for years it's Brady and Belichick for 20 years at one Patriot place. As a free agent, how would you view New England now without Brady, even before they signed Cam a week and a half ago?
You know what? I think. Well, one, the Brady Belichick Brady New England situation shows you how much the NFL is a business. Because in my personal opinion, somebody plays for you for 20 years, we have to figure out and win Super Bowls, and you know we win the AFC every year, and all these different things. Like, we have to figure out a way to give them the Kobe Bryant treatment, right? You're gonna sign with us. You're gonna be with us for life. Like, I don't care, right? So I think that right there is kind of messed up. But to answer your question, I think with what both of these guys, Belichick and Brady, both have egos, and they're both going to try to prove that it was them that was the reason why they were winning. So I do see New England still putting up some points and still being able to win some games. But I also see Brady doing the same thing down there in Tampa.
Last one for you, Cliff Avril. You saw what life was like outside of Detroit. Matthew Stafford has been in Detroit, a former teammate of yours for a long time, has 3 years left on that deal. At this point, do you just want to hope that he gets to see what life is outside of, like, the Lions organization?
That's funny. I think it for me, it worked out. But everybody's situation isn't always like that, right? The grass is not always greener on the other side. You go into another system, another city, you don't look like yourself. But I will say that, you know, for me, it was very rewarding. I don't know if it works out like that for staff. Do I want to see him in another uniform? No, but I think if they surround him with the right players, they surround him with, you know, some more playmakers, you get that defense stacked up and do some things, I think he can do some special things. It's just been a rough ride for my man. And it's unfortunate for staff. I don't think he'll be leaving Detroit, to answer your question. And I don't think the grass is always green on the other side as well. It just works for me.
You got it. So when Stafford goes to another team, he'll have success, is what you're telling me.
He might.
You be well, my friend, all right?
Thanks for having me, man. I appreciate it.
Very nice way there of Cliff Avril in actually giving some credit to Detroit, where in reality, if Matthew Stafford was on a different team, I think his career numbers in terms of wins and losses and playoff success are a whole lot better than what they currently are in Detroit. Let's get a break at 18 past the hour. It's the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. Three more installments of Miserable Moments. We get to one of those installments next. Mikey B got to stop on by as well.
You're listening to the Zach Gelb Show. He's live. He's nationwide on CBS Sports Radio. This is the Zach Gelb Show. Here's your host, Zach Gelb.
The NHL did announce in their return to play, here's the tentative agreement following the dates that have been established. July 13th, they will start the formal training camp. July 26th, clubs will travel to the two hub cities. And then on August 1st will be the start of the qualifying round. Hopefully we get there. That is all I could say. Hopefully we end up having the sports come back. I do think all the sports will start. I know there was a hiccup with baseball with all the testing, and it is fair to raise the questions. Maybe if baseball spent a little bit time, less time on negotiating and bickering over money, if maybe some things were different. You had some test people not show up, then some tests not come back on time with the holiday weekend. It got all crazy today. So we'll see if there's any more hiccups or roadblocks that prevent the sports from starting at the end of the month or for the NHL case in early August. But we will have to wait and see on that front. I do think, though, hockey, baseball, and basketball will start. Will they finish? I don't have a damn clue. I don't. And that could drastically change from now on the 6th day of July to July 30th, July 31st, when basketball is set to pick back up for MLB. You're looking at July 23rd, July 24th. The schedules actually came out tonight for baseball. Isn't that funny? I think it's hilarious. NBA schedules come out. Everyone's talking about it. It shows you the state of the two sports. Everyone's talking about the NBA schedule release. You know, we were going off on how the Pelicans got gifted such an easy schedule. Baseball schedule comes out. Yawn. Who cares? All right. Baseball schedule out. And it just shows you how tone deaf and how out of touch and how baseball dropped the ball here. And there is zero juice with the baseball schedule coming out. And you're only going 60 games. So the games actually mean something. You know, the games actually, they have more meaning on the games now more than ever with this 60-game format. Good to see the hockey have some dates. I was getting a little nervous there for a little bit when hockey, they were the first one to give us the plan out of the four major sports, and then we never got the actual date. You heard about the training camps. That stuff isn't new, but we never got the date when the games would actually be played. You found the two hub cities last week as well. I believe it was, Vancouver and Toronto, I want to say, were the two hub cities. I could be wrong on that, but I'll double check it. But, yeah, it was getting a little bit worried when you didn't have the dates come out. I think it was Edmonton, actually. I want to say it was, you know, the two hub cities there, Trace?
I think it's Vancouver and Edmonton, but I have to double check as well.
Yeah, I think it is Vancouver and Edmonton. All right, anyway, let's get to some miserable moments.
We live for the moments in sports when our team wins it all. Last-second buzzer beaters, game-winning touchdowns, and walk-off home runs. But sometimes it happens against us when our team loses.
Losers.
Our hearts are ripped out of our chest.
Shut up.
We cry and even stuff our face with cookies on the sofa to make us feel better. It's time for the Zach Gelb Show Top 10 Miserable Moments in Sports.
It's actually Toronto and Edmonton. Those are the two hub cities for the hockey restart. Mikey B is here. What's going on, Mikey B?
Hello, Zach. How are you doing this evening? I hope you can hear me and I sound loud and clear in your ears.
Yeah, you sound all right. I'm just wondering if I'm coming over later to rub some milk on your back.
I'd love for you to come over and do that. I mean, you'd be more than welcome. I might need your help in like 3 months when I have a kid. Then that might be even more helpful.
Yeah, I don't know if I want to get involved in that. I think I will just give you a gift. I don't want to change any diapers. I don't want to have to get any milk out of the fridge and hold the baby on my lap and give the child milk. I don't want to have to change any dirty diapers. That's up to you and your wife, your lovely wife, Jessica. And a happy, by the way, anniversary to the Bisseglias as well. What anniversary is this for you?
This will be our 8th year together in marriage. Tomorrow is our 8th year anniversary, which is
oh, it's tomorrow. It's not today.
It's tomorrow. It is tomorrow, but thank you. Yeah. Tomorrow, 8 years together.
Wait, Michael and Jessica. Weren't we texting yesterday and you said the anniversary was tomorrow? Were those texts from today?
That text was from today and I said tomorrow. Although, I have to be honest, like, you know, the days all blend together. So I think it was today. I'm pretty sure it was today. I can double check the chain.
Yeah, I would try to double check, but we text way too much throughout this day.
It's true.
Way too. I can't even find it. Regardless, though, happy anniversary tomorrow to you. So I jumped the gun there. But I guess I was then the first one to wish you happy anniversary then, right?
You were absolutely the first one to wish it, Zach. So I thank you.
Look at that.
And
look at
I'm sure Jess is appreciative of that as well.
Yeah, she probably really doesn't care. I would actually be disappointed in you. I'm going to be disappointed in you tomorrow when I have to wish you happy anniversary again. And you're going to be on the show with us. That does not sound like a very romantic anniversary. Hey, honey, what anniversary you say this was again?
Eighth?
Yeah. How'd you spend your 8th anniversary? Oh, well, I was working on the Zach Gelb show and talking to Zach and paying no attention to you.
Honestly,
you have
though,
a nice
I
mail
think,
lease tomorrow?
Honestly, though, I think she'll be really happy with that idea that I'll be working. What was that question?
It's actually a good idea because that's how the relationship will actually get to 9 or 10 years. If you guys
have less
conversation, less contact. I don't even remember what the question was. Oh, dinner.
Oh, no, nothing planned. It's just straightforward meal plans. My wife's got, like, our meals scheduled out 3 months in advance. So whatever tomorrow is planned, we'll be having. I'm not sure exactly what it is, but nothing special. Nah.
Are you going to start to have to eat the baby food is my question. You're going to do that on your Mike Delivers podcast? You're going to start seeing videos of you eating baby food now?
Yes, you will. Actually, you're the second person to recommend that we should do different types of baby foods to try and see if I like them or not. So, we will be doing that, and that's not a joke.
Here's what I want to see. I want to see Jess with like a spoonful of baby carrots with you in a high chair going, here comes the choo-choo train. Chugga, 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 choo-choo. That's what I want to see. And then Mike could be in a bib and taking his binky out, eating the baby carrots and some spinach.
I'll do it. Let's go. It's been a while. I don't even know if they're any good. They're probably fine, right?
We could have competitive eating. Screw the hot dog eating contest. I saw Peter King didn't like that was getting televised.
Oh,
well, Mikey B's baby, what I'm going to guess the name coming up in a few weeks, up against Mikey B, and we'll see who could eat the baby food better. Maybe get Taylor Mraz into the mix as well. We could have a Mraz versus Bisseglia food off. How do you like that? How do you like them apples?
His baby's older, man. That's not fair. That's a baby advantage by age.
It's like performance-enhancing drugs for babies, a little age
advantage. Exactly.
It would not be fair. All right, what's your miserable moment today? What do you got for us?
All right, so mine's back in 2004, and it's the United States of America men's Olympic basketball team that won the bronze medal. And not only did they just win the bronze, Zach, they lost 3 games in this tournament. They lost to Puerto Rico in the opener. They lost to Lithuania during pool play as well. And then ultimately fell to Argentina, which was loaded, by the way, led by Manu Ginobili, which was a very good team. And I love from this season, this roster isn't bad, it's just really young. But one of my favorite players ever on that team was Richard Jefferson. And on his Twitter handle, he goes, proud one-time Olympic bronze medalist. It was just a disaster, the 2004 squad. Very young LeBron, very young Carmelo, very young Wade, and they just never got it together. Larry Brown was the head coach. And if you remember, after that, USA made some changes to how they got their teams prepared and ready and the roster and everything. But it wasn't just like, oh, one ups and loss at the end to Argentina. They lost games. I mean, 3 losses is a lot for Olympic play. They were fortunate enough to beat Lithuania the second time around, and that's why they were able to at least get the bronze medal. But that was an embarrassing loss that was highlighted by a Luis Scola dunk that put him up by 8 with like 6 seconds left, and it was just a disaster.
So I look back at that roster. You had Allen Iverson, Stephon Marbury, Dwayne Wade, Carlos Boozer, Carmelo Anthony, LeBron James, Emeka Okafor, Sean Marion, Amari Stoudemire, Tim Duncan, Lamar Odom, and as you said, Richard Jefferson. The assistant coaches. You had Pop and Roy Williams.
Yeah, it has decent names, but it's just like LeBron James at that time is only 20 years old or so. So these are all babies. So their leaders on that team are Iverson and Marbury, and that just didn't work out, obviously. And then the guys that ultimately became the superstars were just too young. And they played up against a team like in Argentina. I mean, these were men they were playing up against, and they just couldn't handle it.
Yeah, it's pathetic. That is a miserable moment. All right, my miserable moment, it was actually back-to-back bar mitzvahs. I had one of those rare Saturday-Sunday double-dip bar mitzvah days that screws the sports fan like yours truly when you have to go to one of these events. One was a family friend and one was a very close friend, so I had to go. Usually I'd be saying, yeah, I don't want to go, have zero interest, just send a gift, and that's it. Well, on Saturday, it was a good day. It was a good day. Mets win. John Main extends the Mets season. Went like over 7 innings. Yeah, even went into the 8th and allowed that one hit. I believe it was a little dribbler as well. So they win that day, comfortably cruise, 13-0. Good time at the bar mitzvah. Even though I was at a young age isolated away in 2007 watching the games and wanting zero social life at that time and trying to see if the Mets could save this season. Because remember, this is the same season that they had a 7-game lead with 17 games to play before they did blow the lead, didn't even make the postseason, and the Phillies do win the division. Game 162, I went to a bar mitzvah the next day. It was a Sunday bar mitzvah. At the time, this bar mitzvah place didn't have any television. Saturday, they had televisions. I was sitting at a bar and watching the games. It was like a private bar area that the family didn't have, but that's where I went to get some peace and quiet and at the time have like a water and a soda since I was very young. The next day, though, I called the place in advance, you know, that weekend before, and I said, do you have TVs? They said, like, maybe they had a TV or two. I forget exactly, but they weren't turning them on for the bar mitzvah. They don't do that. So what I ended up doing, I had a watchman in the house. I brought the watchman. The place, the bar mitzvah place, had an outdoor area, and it was by the bay, too. So I'm sitting on this porch adjacent to a bay, and everyone is crowding around watching this Mets game. Mets against the Marlins. Tom Glavine, Hall of Famer, got his 300th win that year. I believe up against the Cubs, I want to say, in the summer. He's going up against the Marlins. Allows 7 runs in the first inning. Mets end up losing the game 8-1. A dad comes up to me in the third inning, and he goes, are they still trailing? He goes, yeah. He goes, if I see that watchman out again, I'm going to take it. I'm going to throw it into the water. And it's not because I'm mad that you're watching. It's because the Mets freaking stink and always rip my heart out. Never met that guy in my life. I had no clue who he was. So that's the miserable moment for the day.
I can just imagine that.
I was like a little punk, you know. I was in middle school, a little punk trying to watch the Mets games and try to see them do well, and it was a disaster. After the euphoria of Saturday, then Sunday happens, and it was an absolute disgrace, and they choked it again the next year. Back-to-back years of choking for the New York Mets. Those are miserable moments.
You're listening to The Zach Gelb Show. The Zach Gelb Show is on the air across the nation on CBS Sports Radio. Here's Zach Gelb.
CBS Sports Radio's toll-free line, 855-212-4227, is sponsored by Geico. Did you know that right now Geico is offering an extra 15% credit on car, motorcycle, and RV policies? That's on top of what Geico could already save you. So what are you waiting for? Visit geico.com to learn more. In addition to that, Doing More is sponsored by The Home Depot. With everything you need to do, project smarter, faster, and easier, The Home Depot is here to help, and they have many ways to help. The Home Depot, how doers get more done. A player doing more, how about Bryson DeChambeau? DeChambeau won the Rocket Mortgage Classic yesterday by 3 strokes for his first victory of the season. I remember a few weeks back when we were talking about Bryson DeChambeau, and you saw him back in, I believe it was the Charles Schwab Challenge at Colonial. And you saw that he put on 40 pounds. And I was watching that. I go, why do you need to do that? And I know he's trying to become Hulk and do a Hulk smash and hit the ball farther. It has been so entertaining, though. like him, dislike him. We'll get into that in just a second with some of the things that did happen going back to Saturday. He makes golf exciting. I was talking to a few buddies of mine. We were watching the golf the other day. And I said, look at it. Tiger's not even playing right now. And these golfing events have been exciting. They have been entertaining. Now, I'm not glued to each and every one. I'm not a huge golf fan. I don't dislike the sport. I like to play it, even though I'm horrible at it. And it's the most humbling sport there is. But I would even say before the pandemic, I would try to watch 4 to 7 or 8 golf events a year. And recently I've attended a bunch. I went to Bethpage Black last year for the PGA Championship. I went to Aronimink back in 2018 or 19, I want to say, for the BMW Championship. And I thoroughly enjoyed it. Thoroughly enjoyed it. It was fun to go in person and to see the way that these golfers are able to play. It's ridiculous. And my favorite part about golf, you know what it is when a golfer has a human moment. It's when they have a human moment. Because you watch the golfers and you see them just smash golf shot after golf shot after golf shot. And it'll be like 100 yards out. They'll put the ball right next to the pin as well. And the short game is impressive too. And they'll sink 30, 40 foot putts like it's nothing. And I'm sitting there watching. I go, I can't relate to that. I can't relate to that whatsoever. I'll show you how messed up my golf game is. I played this course. It was on Thursday. Front nine was okay. Back nine, could not hit water if I fell out of a boat. And I was that bad. And that may not be the best term to use because all I did actually was hit water. But you get the point. I could not hit a good shot until the last hole on the back nine. We had a nice drive. On Saturday after the barbecue, my friend lives on a golf course, has the pool, all that. We go to the golf course. I want to say he lives on the ninth hole. The other day when I played it's a 10th hole. It's his first hole in the back nine. So he lives in the 10th hole. The other day I played that course, water, had to take a drop. We're doing longest drive. I hit a low shot, but it goes far. Goes really far. Ended up having the longest drive. And that was with a few White Claws and a few high noons in my system as well. And that's my golf game. I have zero control of it. Zero control of it. The other day, could not hit that shot to save my life. Then go out on Saturday, bam. Beautiful shot. Beautiful, beautiful shot. When I want to get back to Bryson DeChambeau, though, and get away from Zach Gelb's golf game, you've seen what he's been able to do the last few weeks. It's been entertaining. The long drives, the field is still very good, even though Tiger's not playing. And DeChambeau, you knew he was going to win one of these tournaments eventually. Since coming back from the coronavirus, you know, the whole golf world. At the Charles Schwab, he finished third. The RBC Heritage, he finished eighth. The Travelers, he was 15 under and finished sixth. And he trailed the other day going into Sunday. I think it was by 3 strokes. And ends up with a masterful 65 the other day on Sunday. 66 on Thursday, 67 on Friday, 67 on Saturday, and then a 65 on Sunday. I take you back to Saturday, though. This is what really annoyed me with DeChambeau. There was a tweet from Will Gray, and it said this. Bryson running a little hot, caught up with him on 7, where he took a Sergio slash at the sand after splashing out a greenside bunker, muttered an expletive after missing the par save, and spent 60 seconds in a testy discussion with the cameraman on his way to the 8th tee. So I see that. I go, why is he attacking the cameraman? And I thought to myself, maybe the cameraman got a little bit closer to him with the whole coronavirus protocols. Maybe the cameraman was in the wrong. But no, here's what happened. He had a prima donna moment. He had a fit. He had a petulant temper tantrum on the golf course. And if that's what happened, that would be it. It's not the first time someone yelled at a cameraman. It's not the first time someone yelled at a coach or yelled at a spectator. We've seen that happen before in sports. It was afterwards, I was reading what he said via the Golf Channel, and DeChambeau said this about the incident. He was literally watching me the whole entire way after getting out of the bunker, walking up to the next green, and I was just like, sir, what is the need to watch me that long, DeChambeau said, per the Golf Channel once again. I mean, I understand it's his job to video me, But at the same point, I think we need to start protecting our players. Oh, my God. Wah, 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 wah. Wah! That's what he's doing right here. I think we need to start protecting our players out here compared to showing a potential vulnerability and hurting someone's image. I just don't think that's necessarily the right thing to do. Now, come on, Bryson. You got to be better than this. If you don't want the negativity shown on TV, don't do something that's negative. And I have zero problem, by the way, if you had a bad golf shot. I do this all the time when I hit 9,000 bad golf shots. If you throw the club, or if you say an expletive, or if you get annoyed. But you don't need to attack the poor camera guy. You don't need to direct your frustration at the camera guy. It's not the camera guy's fault. It's your fault. You hit a bad shot, so be it. It happens. You can't have it both ways, though, that you only want the positivity and you want all the talk to be about you when you bulk up and you become the human Hulk when you try to smash the ball and when you gain 40 pounds. You can't have it both ways when you're all about promoting yourself. And then when something doesn't go your way, you throw a fit. You cannot be doing that. And I know that there are some golf purists, and I like to call them golf snobs, that will go, oh, he should play the way that the game is supposed to be played, with class and with dignity, and he should show zero emotion. That's boring. That's so boring. I actually enjoyed what he did later on Sunday. You go a day later when he's on 16 and he has a long birdie putt. He makes the putt and he gives like a little fist pump. He gives a Hulkian roar. He didn't have a problem with that being shown, though. You got to have it both ways. The moments where the game gets the best of you and you're frustrated, that should be shown on television. It should definitely be shown on television. And I'm not going to think that Bryson DeChambeau is a bad guy because he got PO'd. What would make you think that you're a bad guy or that you're not doing something properly is the way that you handle the situation. And then afterwards, you thought that was the right thing to say. And I don't know Bryson DeChambeau in terms of what he's like as a person. But let's be real. I don't want to hear that you're upset when they catch you in a moment of frustration, but all you want is the positive stuff? No. I want to see what's authentic. I want to see what is real. And in this sport, there's going to be good days, there's going to be bad days. And even when he's having a great tournament, you even see how you get off your guard for 1 second, and you have a reaction, and then all of a sudden you get all concerned about that? Come on. Bryson DeChambeau could be better there. He could be a lot better. It's not the camera guy's fault. And then to double down afterwards, geez, that's bad. That's a bad look. Onsides, offsides coming up next. Hour number 4. We get it started in 5 minutes. It's Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.